Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Betzer, your host on The Raw Deal, right here on Revolution Radio, this 29th day of November. My dear friend and colleague, Scott Bennett, has been in the Donbass for 10 days to 2 weeks. He has given a sensational interview on RT I want to share with you. Notice that the anchor, she appears to me to be British, seems surprised when Scott talks about Ukraine is the new Israel. He doesn't use those words, but he explains replacement of Ukrainians with Jews from Palestine, and she seems to think that's just a theory, but I have no doubt that is a fact. Listen now to Scott Bennett on RT.
UN Armed Officer Scott Bennett. Scott, thank you so much for coming in and visiting us.
Lovely to be with you.
The first thing, obviously, I want to just hear about, we just saw, you've just got back from Donbass. Just talk us through some of the highlights.
Well, first let me say something. Thank you to Olya, our director, and our cameraman, and our driver, Sonia. They kept me alive. So did the Russian military that were there, and I was very grateful to the Russian government for the visa. When I went to Donetsk, I saw basically what I think the Germans saw in World War II when they inspected the Nazi American. I was going through and I was seeing the crimes that were being done by U.S. government weapons and military and finances. I saw shredded buildings. I saw holes in the ground. I saw people's lives ruined. So that was the first takeaway. When I arrived at the city of Donetsk, I saw a war zone. I saw a city of civilians being terrorized. This isn't a conventional war. These are acts of terror being sponsored by the United Kingdom and the United States and NATO for a fooled and doomed campaign against Russia. But I also was left tremendously optimistic because the Russian military and all the Russian volunteers from every corner of Russia are the greatest men, the greatest soldiers one could have. And Russia will never lose with such men because they're not fighting out of a vendetta. They're fighting out of a love for their families and their motherland. They don't want to kill the Ukrainians, but they have to stand and defend their homeland. And I think the Ukrainians are all leaving Zelensky in droves, and they're looking for reasons to come to the Russian front lines. And I'd simply say every Ukrainian should have no fear of any Russian soldier or volunteer. Every Ukrainian should lay down their guns and come to the Russian side where they will live and preserve their own country. If they don't, if they continue to follow Zelensky, every one of them will die and Ukraine will be a ruin and an ash heap in history.
You talked about, obviously, I mean, the very dark portrait that you paint for us. It is obviously a war zone. Did you have any close encounters?
Well, when we were leaving, they fired multiple drones with HIMAR missiles, and maybe they were trying to kill me because I was out there broadcasting and I was out putting up the scenes of women that were left in one-room apartments with all their belongings around them and devastated lives. I saw the men who were cameramen out there, too, that captured the images of tortured Ukrainian women that were left behind by these drug-induced, fanatical Ukrainian Zelensky Nazis. And I saw and inspected the weapons. I saw the U.S. defense contractor Uline, which everybody can look up uline.com and contact them. These are American contractors, American HIMARS, American cluster bombs being used to target civilians. That's a war crime. That's a crime against humanity. So when I go back, I'm going to be taking all this material back to the Republicans, back to Jim Jordan, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Gates, and saying all of this needs to stop because we are committing war crimes in the names of the American people, and it is a violation of our Constitution. And I also told the men on the front, have no fear. The United States, American people do not want to back this war. They are not backing Zelensky. They are not giving money and weapons anymore.
Well, I mean, talking about the American aspect of this, we know that Washington is the patron of Ukraine, and that the Ukrainian government, both militarily and politically, would quite literally collapse yes. without that money coming in from the U.S. I mean, Washington recently admitted that 96% of the funds that it had allocated for Kyiv have been used. So how much longer are American taxpayers going to be willing to foot this bill? Do we think that we're going to see a shift in the attitude towards Zelensky and co. around election time?
Well, I know as an American and as a conservative and someone who's been close to Tucker Carlson and close to President Trump and all my political experiences, no American conservative Christian wants this. No one wants to back Zelensky. No one wants to give money or weapons to commit war crimes. So we have fired the American Congress and the Democrat demoniacs and said no more. And the Democrats have been thrown from power. So the Republicans have come in, and it's now a question of are they going to listen to the American people who have spoken resoundingly no more backing of Ukraine or Zelensky. Zelensky is Hitler in the bunker. He's a dead man walking. He is a lunatic. And if there's any responsible military figure left in Ukraine, they should rise up, arrest him for war crimes, and immediately sue for peace with Russia. If there's any if there's any Ukrainian military man with honor, they will do that. Otherwise, the Ukrainian military leadership are just as fanatical and worthless as this political puppet Zelensky following the Biden dictates.
Well, if we look inside Kyiv, since you've raised it, I mean, the representative of Zelensky's party, Servant of the People, recently, I think, if not just yesterday or today, called upon the army chief, that's Valery Zaluzhny, a polarizing figure. People say that he hasn't done enough. Some say that he's a hero, to step down. Do you think that we're beginning to see some cracks, a split between the political and the military elite within Ukraine?
Well, I think you're witnessing exactly that. You're seeing people in the military realizing this is hopeless. There's no hope for Ukraine. There's no hope for a military victory against Russia. I'm astounded by the Russian humility and patience. I thought Russia would go in within a month and destroy everything. They have not. And it's been a revelation of the magnanimity of the Russian character that Tolstoy and others have talked about. Russia never wanted to go in and hurt Ukrainians, but they could not tolerate a Nazi presence of fanaticism that outlawed the Russian culture, outlawed the Russian language, killed women and children. That was the whole purpose of this. There was no Russian invasion of Ukraine. There was Russia stepping in, defending the republics of Donetsk and Luhansk and Crimea that declared independence from Nazis. So there's been a shift, and I think we're witnessing Zaluzhny or others saying, we have to rise up like Colonel Stauffenberg did in World War II, and the removal of Zelensky follows what they tried to do in the removal of Adolf Hitler. And Zelensky is no better than Hitler. In fact, he's worse because he's more stupid, he's worse dressed, and he certainly doesn't know how to prosecute a peace deal when it was in front of him last February of 2022.
Well, it's interesting because you talk about discontent, and I would imagine that there are many relatives of those who have lost brothers and fathers and sisters at this stage. We're seeing women being recruited who are pretty angry and perhaps ready to say no to Zelensky. But he hasn't, and he's not giving them the chance because elections are going to be cancelled. Now, his justification is that military martial law allows for that. Do you buy that justification?
No, Zelensky is hanging on by his fingernails, hoping that the United States is going to rescue him in a C-130 and take him back to his Miami mansion. He is sorely misadvised, and I would hope Russia would blow up that mansion by any means possible. But Zelensky is driving the Ukrainian men and women and children and old people, 17 to 7 years old, to their deaths. He's loading them into the meat grinder like wood into a sawmill. And the Ukrainians have foolishly went along with it instead of rising up saying, we want to be a neutral country, friendly to Europe, friendly to the United States, and friendly to Russia. Kiev was the source and the original land of Mother Russia's Orthodox Church. Zelensky, a fake Jew, has destroyed the Russian Orthodox religion in Ukraine. And he has, outlawed and in fact, abused priests. So he's everything that the American people find abhorrent. And I think for that reason, they're demanding no more money or weapons go to him. But I do think he's on thin ice. He realizes it. But the Ukrainian people have to overthrow him. The Ukrainian people have to realize their future lies without Zelensky. If they have Zelensky in any way kept in that country, it is like keeping a cancer in the body, and Ukraine will only die a worse death.
You know, I feel that we have to mention also the Israel aspect to this. This is obviously a story that is dominating a lot of our bulletins, quite rightly. And I know, cynical as it sounds, but did the war in Gaza come at a good time for the West vis-a-vis Ukraine?
Well, it's certainly a pivot point. I know that the Israeli Mossad were in Ukraine training the Ukrainians how to torture people. And I know the Israeli Mossad have been involved from 9/11 to Iraq to all sorts of bad behavior. I know Israel stabbed Russia in the back. I know Israel also stabbed the United States in the back, stabbed President Trump in particular. So Israel's special services involved with Ukraine sent 2,000 of those soldiers back to Israel when this conflict opened up. 2,000 Israeli soldiers left the battlefields of Ukraine fighting and killing Russians to go back to Israel and kill Gazans and Palestinians and engage in this genocide. So I think the United States is very happy to have pivoted out because there's no winning against Russia. Russians will never lose, they'll never surrender, they'll never retreat, and every corner of Russia has come to this fight, and it is something to behold. It is a deeply humbling thing to meet all of these Russian volunteers and military come with such joy in their hearts, smiles on their faces, but resolve like men of steel, never to back down, and they will carry this and win to the day. But Israel has been a big part of this. I think their original plan, too, was to bring all sorts of Jewish repopulation into the areas of Ukraine that they were trying to kill and push out all the Orthodox Christians. That's something else the Ukrainian Orthodox Christians should understand. Zelensky, the fake Jew, has went in there and tried to push out, destroy all of the Orthodox Christians in these areas of Ukraine for Israel's transplant out over there. That's some of the intelligence that was coming to me from men on the battleground.
Well, that's quite a theory and so sinister, if indeed true. Then I kind of have to just ask you as a sort of final thing. What's the off-ramp then? At what point does Ukraine say, I'm going to sit down and talk to you?
They have to see that President Putin, and this was coming to me when I was interrogating or questioning prisoners of war. I was asking them similar things, and it came to me that they need to see President Putin and Lavrov and Zakharova as people of warmth and generosity and character and gentleness, that they are the prodigal father and Ukraine is the prodigal son. Mm-hmm. And they are welcoming the Ukrainian prodigal son back into the arms of Mother Russia. They can be independent. They can be of their own country. But they can't be a NATO aircraft carrier to wage war against Russia. They can't be a country full of Nazis that wage war against the Russians and outlaw the Russian language, outlaw the Russian church, outlaw the Russian culture. But the Ukrainian military and the Ukrainian volunteers need to see that Russia is beckoning them to come back to a state of peace. And I think, again, if every Ukrainian on the battlefield puts down their weapons into the snow and puts a white flag and runs to the Russian line, they will be greeted with hot tea, food, and a welcoming gesture and a hug, and they will see what true Slavic Russian brotherhood is. And if they keep fighting you, Zelensky, they will all die, and Ukraine will be nothing but a memory, and Joe Biden and Rishi Sunak and Emmanuel Macron and Boris Johnson and Schultz and Ursula von Leyen will simply go, it didn't work, while 500,000 Ukrainian voices call out from the grave in a haunting desolation that the United States and the United Kingdom and all of NATO are responsible for, and there need to be crimes against humanity prosecuting these people for what they did to the Russian people in Donetsk, Luhansk, and Crimea. And I go back to America to make sure those proofs and evidence are brought forth to the American Congress.
Well, I think that's probably the, I mean, like with any war, that is the most tragic thing. Politicians sending boys to the front, really suffering no losses themselves and willing to sacrifice young people and deprive them of their future. We really appreciate you coming in and giving us this fresh perspective. Let's hope for everyone that this tragedy wraps up as quickly as possible and that people wake up to the reality of what's really going on there.
I hope so, Saskia, and I'm left with a lot of hope because the Russian military and the Russian volunteers were very, very disciplined and powerful. And I was amazed at their humility and welcoming of me. I was very appreciative.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that you did get a warm welcome. You had a very warm welcome here, too. It was an honor to have you. That was former U.S. officer, U.S. Army officer Scott Bennett. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Well, honestly, that's probably the best single report to come out about the Donbass and so forth we've had yet. It's been circulated, too, now to the Arab nations in translation. I think this is a very welcome development. If you go to the site, you'll see every comment about this is positive. Scott mentioned in passing that they had declined a peace agreement offer coming from Putin. Well, get this. Russia Today. Putin aid reveals original peace terms Russia offered Ukraine. Crimea and Donbass were non-negotiable, Vladimir Medinsky has said. Kiev could have stopped the conflict in April 2022 by recognizing the independence of the two Donbass republics in Crimea's Russian territory. Head of Moscow negotiating team Vladimir Medinsky said Tuesday. That would be yesterday. The former culture minister led the Russian delegation at the Istanbul talks, where he said Ukraine missed the opportunity to end the war and save hundreds of thousands of lives. My understanding, by the way, is that the West, the United States, and the UK would not allow this to happen. Among our non-negotiable demands were the recognition of Russian sovereignty over Crimea and the recognition of the independence of the Donbass republics, Medinsky told the Russian news agencies. Yet Moscow also had a long list of humanitarian demands pertaining to the protection of the Russian-speaking population of Donbass. He insists Russia never set itself the goal of conquering Ukraine, and that the chief objective of its military operation was the protection of Russian-speaking civilians. However, backed with the promise of full Western support, Ukrainian President Zelensky chose war. The head of the Ukrainian delegation at the Istanbul talks, David Arkhamiya, previously confirmed the non-circulating rumors that the conflict could have ended after just 2 months had Kiev accepted Moscow's demand for neutrality. This was the main thing for them. They were ready to end the war if we accepted neutrality like Finland once did. And we would make a commitment that we will not join NATO. That was the main thing. Erica Hamm told the Ukrainian broadcaster One by One on Friday. Arkhamy, who heads Zelensky's Servant of the People Party in the Ukrainian parliament, also confirmed previous reports that Boris Johnson, the UK prime minister at the time, told the government of Ukraine to keep fighting. This is great tragedy because Ukrainians have lost some 500,000 young men. And of course, now they're so desperate, they're sending old men, women, children, just outrageous. This thus confirms that the very idea that Putin was intent on conquering Ukraine was a myth. There's a report about that from Information Clearinghouse. Evidence suggests that Russia and Ukraine were engaged in fruitful peace negotiation post-February 24, 2022, facilitated by Turkey and Israel. However, progress halted when the U.S. and U.K. advised Ukraine to abandon the talks. The West's conventional view that Russia aimed to annex Ukraine is challenged by the negotiation focusing on Russia's demand for Ukrainian neutrality against joining NATO. Some believe the intervention from the West led to Russia annexing more Ukrainian territories. John Mearsheimer reports, there's a growing body of compelling evidence showing that Russia and Ukraine were involved in serious negotiation to end the war in Ukraine right after it started on 24 February 2022. These talks were facilitated by Turkish President Recep Erdogan and former Israeli PM Natalia Bennett, and featured detailed and candid discussions on the terms of a possible settlement. By all accounts, these negotiations, which took place in March, April 2022, were making real progress when Britain and the U.S. told Ukrainian President Zelensky to abandon them, which he did. Coverage of these events has focused on how foolish and irresponsible it was for President Joe Biden and Prime Minister Boris Johnson to put an end to these negotiations, given all the death and destruction that Ukraine has suffered since then in a war. Here, he suggests, Kiev is likely to lose. I declare, has already lost. Meanwhile, turning to events in the Middle East, Colonel McGraber has tweeted the following. We are on the road to a regional war in the Middle East. When the ceasefire ends, I don't see any evidence of an end state other than the elimination of Gaza. When this commences, Middle Eastern nations will coalesce into a full-scale war on Israel. The question becomes, will Israel survive? I think he's got it right. I'm kind of intrigued by the way that Elon Musk has made a visit to Israel to receive the Bibi Netanyahu treatment. Let me say, Lyndon Johnson was famous for the Johnson treatment. He could take virtually any man and reason with him to create, bring about an outcome where Johnson had the knack for sizing up a man's weaknesses virtually on the spot. He was uncanny. Well, Musk has been invited to Israel to get the Netanyahu treatment. There's a tweet about it, very, very disturbing in my opinion, what's going on here. Let me make sure I get the sound.
Emotionally difficult day.
I'll start again.
It's certainly been a day, I would say an emotionally difficult day to see the places where people were murdered. I just did a talk with the Prime Minister, and I think there's, I mean, obviously, there are three things that need to happen in the Gaza situation. I mean, there's no choice but to kill those who insist on murdering civilians. There's no choice. They're not going to change their mind. But, and then the second thing is to change the education so that a new generation of murderers is not trained to be murderers. And then the third thing, which is also very important, is to try to build prosperity. It was certainly been a day, I would say an emotionally difficult day to see the places where people were murdered. I just did a talk with the Prime Minister, and I think there's I mean, obviously, there are three things that need to happen in the Gaza situation. I mean, there's no choice but to kill those who insist on murdering civilians. There's no choice. They're not going to change their mind. But and then the second thing is to change the education so that a new generation of murderers is not trained to be murderers. And then the third thing, which is also very important, is to try to build prosperity. It was certainly been a day.
Well, I've repeated that twice now. Let me just say, when Elon Musk says, you must kill those who are murdering civilians, he's talking about Israel. I mean, look, don't let himself be played. They are special bleeding. They're committing an elementary fallacy of former furniture or used car salesman like Netanyahu knows to only cite the evidence favorable to your side. So they'll show, say, Israelis that they claim were killed by Hamas, many of whom may very well have been killed by Israel itself, to run up the tally. So they have a greater justification for the nonstop slaughter of Palestinians. That's like the used car salesman who talks about the wonderful leather upholstery and the nice stereo and doesn't mention the rings are shot and the car needs a new transmission. If you step back and look at the wholesale slaughter going on, then when he talks about killing those who insist on murdering civilians, he's talking about Israel. Thus, Kevin Barrett even gave a title to this. Elon Musk has no choice but to kill 6 million Israeli Jews. What he means by that, of course, it is the Jews who are killing the Palestinians, a massive, massive slaughter taking place before our very, very eyes. Absolutely stunning stuff. So I'm fascinated by all of this. I think Colonel McGregor has it right. We are on the verge of a regional war. The question is, will that regional war be restricted to the Middle East? I see no possible way it can be restricted to the Middle East. But I do see a coalition forming, Saudi Arabia, Turkey taking the lead, Egypt, Algeria, Lebanon, Syria, Iran. Stand by and I'll bring in my special guest. Look at what's coming.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I've been very fortunate to have a visit from our South African, Simon Roche, who represents the Suderlanders. That's a self-defense unit that's emerged in South Africa. Those who have followed the history of that strife-torn nation recognizes that since the abolition of apartheid, there's been revenge killings of blacks killing whites, even though it was the whites who have made South Africa prominent and prosperous. The situation is quite tragic. I suspect that we may have a civil war taking place here in the United States. And my guest is an expert in the area of self-defense. So I wanted him to join us today. My great pleasure. Simon, welcome to the show, and you may begin with comments on any of the stories already or wherever you prefer, my friend. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Professor Petzer. Can you hear me well enough?
Yes, very well.
Good, good. I was listening to a Russia Today interview of the former American military officer? Did I understand that correctly?
Yes.
I thought that was quite fascinating to hear an American make those candid admissions. How much traction he's going to have when he gets back to the USA, I don't know, because it looks as if the deck is stacked against any narrative that faintly resembles the truth and any narrative that explores ethnicity. You know, it's a very sensitive subject, and I don't want to, as we say in South Africa, scratch where it doesn't itch. But one can't help but be bewildered by the fact that a bunch of almost a nation, if you like, of neo-Nazis or Nazis is being led by a non-ethnic Ukrainian Russian speaker to this slaughter. One can't help thinking of the concept of the Judas goat. In the old days, at slaughterhouses, at abattoirs, sheep would be led to the slaughter by a trained goat, which would then sort of slip off to one side, and the sheep would keep walking down the gangway to where they would be slaughtered. One can't help but wonder if this isn't one of the greatest exercises in deception in the history of the world. That's the first thought that comes to mind. You also can't help wondering about the timing of the Israel/Ukraine events, whether that timing is not somehow deliberate. And I was looking at some figures this morning that were sent to me about U.S. national debt. And I couldn't help wondering to myself, is this not also timed to coincide the way that it is doing? And I'll give another example that's a little bit more trivial, but which will have far greater ramifications for the United States of America than any of the three preceding examples. And that is that the United Arab Emirates has, in the past 48 hours, it's being leaked, it's being claimed, but by multiple sources. Therefore, there's reason to believe that there's substance to the rumor. And it has been coming for a long, long time. That's another reason to believe that it may at long last be realized or be being manifest. And that is that the United Arab Emirates will henceforth accept more or less any currency for oil and gas sales. The United Arab Emirates is a tiny place, but it has one of the largest gas, natural gas, reserves in the world, or resources in the world. And that just may be the beginning of an enormous assault upon the dollar, because the dollar balances or teeters on the central pillar of the petrodollar. So I'm listening to that thing that you featured, that clip, Professor, and my mind is racing with all of the other things that are going on at the same time as this barbaric war in Ukraine, and wondering to myself, is it not intentional that they should all be happening at once?
Well, I'm very much of the opinion, of course, that the Gaza event was really motivated in part, only in part, because they want to secure the gas and oil that belong to the Palestinians, where Netanyahu has already granted leases to six international oil companies for exploration, which appears to me to be completely illegal. They want to create this new canal, the Ben-Gurion Canal, as an alternative to the Suez, right through the middle of Gaza. So what I see taking place there is an urban renewal project. They just want to clear out all the buildings and all the population so they can annex Gaza for Israel. But this is also a part of the failure of the war in Ukraine, which was intended to create the new Israel out of Ukraine. As I'm sure you're aware, Simon, the vast majority of the population of Israel today are not descendants of the tribe of Judah. They have no Hebrew blood. They're actually descendants of the region known as Icaria and modern-day Ukraine. And therefore, while the Palestinians are bona fide Semites, the Israelis of today are not, which makes Israel the greatest practitioner of anti-Semitism in the world today. But I reiterate, and this is where the Russian host of RT seemed to be surprised when Scott Bennett was intimating about the desire to turn Ukraine into the new Israel. I mean, it's fascinating, because that's exactly what the war has been all about and why it's been fought so fiercely. Your thoughts?
Yes, I agree very strongly with you. And another thing that contributes to what you're saying, I think, is the huge number of comments being made in Jewish circles, whether one is anti-Semitic or not anti-Semitic is immaterial, in Jewish circles about how the final plan is now coming together. How finally the required war to precede the coming of the Messiah is being generated, or it's being caused, if you like. And so, again, one can't help wondering, is this not all tied in, and is it not all intentional and deliberate and purposeful and premeditated, especially if those people who claim to be the brains behind it say that it is. If they say, look, we've been working on this thing for 2,000 years, finally we're getting it right. I would refer to one Rabbi Daniel Glatstein, or Glatstein, if you like. Smooth stone, or pure stone, is the translation of that surname. Daniel Glatstein on YouTube. Even on YouTube, these guys are saying, we're finally getting it right. This is the big moment. This is Tikkun Olam, the perfection of chaos, because the Messiah can only come in a time of absolute perfection or absolute chaos. And humankind being humankind, there will never be a time of absolute perfection. Therefore, we must strive for this version of Tikkun Olam, absolute chaos. And as I've said to people in recent days, people who've said to me, well, that sounds like nonsense, I don't agree with you. I've said to them, you don't have to agree with me, and I don't have to agree with anything that those guys are saying. What's relevant here is that they believe it. They believe that they are successfully manufacturing a third world war, absolute economic chaos, complete destruction far and wide, including, as you rightly allude, their historic homeland, and a financial catastrophe of the first order, potentially, in the United States of America, Professor. I can't help being absolutely enchanted by the fact that the people who believe that they're in control of this thing are now openly bragging that this is what they are doing.
Yes, yes. The arrogance is rather dumbfounding. I agree. Simon, continue.
There's an arrogance, a hubris, that's almost, you wonder to yourself how people can be so blatantly arrogant, as you say. They're going to get caught out sooner or later. What are the consequences of that going to be? Is there going to be a backlash? Mind you, I'm sorry to bring in such a diverse subject. When you consider the absence of backlash, the lack of backlash to the COVID clot shots, then you think to yourself, well, you know, so many millions, tens of millions of people have been injured now by government statistics, or the admission of government statistics, and there's been precious little backlash or reaction. Maybe we've been dumbed down or weakened by the food that we eat or the fluoridation of water. I don't know. It's not my field. I'm not saying that fluoridation of water is bad. It has never been my stomping ground, portion of the conspiratorium, or maybe it's chemtrails. I don't know. I lack the acumen to know. But I can't help thinking to myself, goodness me, have we been weakened so much that we can't react when they vaccinate, you know, a few billion people to die? I mean, it's well understood now. We know from Naomi Wolf's work and the work of many other people that the adverse events rates were recognized years prior to the COVID, when they first started working on the vaccinations, which was long prior to the COVID. Nobody's reacting to that. Perhaps nobody will react to the assault on the US dollar, and nobody will react to Talmudic Jews saying, right, now we destroy the entire world. We're proud of it, and we're happy about it, and we don't care what anybody else says. I don't know, Professor. Are we going to sit here complacently, laissez-faire, and just observe the entire world go to hell? Or perhaps we'll go one better. We'll delude ourselves like fools that the answer is to vote. If we all vote, perhaps we can set the clock back to the day before Roe versus Wade. I mean, we're so stupid, it's almost like we're doing it deliberately. We're so thick that a space alien might wonder to themselves if we're not being intentionally dumb in the way that we're going about resolving the apparently terminal crises of our time, the coalescent multiple crises that are converging to threaten our existences. I mean, this is existential stuff that is coalescing against us. And we're kind of sitting in, as one American lady told me, and I've never forgotten, my big truck. She said, as long as she was speaking tongue in cheek, she was a very charming and intelligent lady, but she said to me, as long as I've got my big truck, it don't matter at all. And of course, we have a version of that in South Africa. In my country, we have, I'm sorry to say it, all of the terrible things that dumb us down and make us weaker and distract us. We have kickball, and we have drugs, and we have pornography, and we have a superabundance of food that makes us ill, and liquor, and so on. So we're no better. But I use that illustration of my big truck. As long as I've got my big truck, the world can go to hell. They can poison me to death. It don't matter. I don't know, Professor. Perhaps you have something intelligent to say on the subject, but I am stymied. I am absolutely stymied. I don't know what to think anymore. I'm completely bewildered and perplexed by the state of the world and of our Western reaction to it. You know, if I think about what's going on in the world, I'll end with this. It seems to me that it's like one of those diagrams that you see in marketing where they take a circle and then they draw three arcs that just overlap one another in the center, within the circle. And the Western world, the Christian world, Christendom, if you like, appears to be that portion of the globe that sits in the middle where those three arcs overlap in the center of the circle. You know, everything bad that's happening in the world today may apply to this culture too, or it may apply to that race, it may apply to the other country, and it may apply to the next nation, but it always seems to apply to. We are always the common denominator, Christendom and the West. The ideal example is LGBTQ. Why is it that it is being rammed down the throats of innocent little boys and girls in the United States, especially before all other countries in the world by a long, long way? I would go so far as to say exponentially. But then also the West, Australia, New Zealand, incidentally, the same places that were the focus of the clot shots. Canada, again, the clot shots. Western Europe, the clot shots and LGBTQ. Australia, New Zealand, the USA, Canada, and Western Europe, the central focus of the emerging financial crisis. I wonder if this thing isn't directed more at Christendom as a whole than at the other peoples of the world, because every bad thing that's going on seems to include us, whereas not every bad thing. LGBTQ is the perfect example. There's no discussion of it in Calcutta. There's no discussion of it in Astana. There's no discussion of it in Phnom Penh. There's no discussion of it in Tokyo, practically, in the classrooms of Tokyo, as a compulsory thing. But it is being rammed down the throats of everybody in the West. It just seems to me that there's too much coincidence here. Too often, we are included in every single last crisis, no matter what it is, even if it's, you know, by arm's length, such as in Israel, where the USA is providing all of the support for Israel to do the wicked things that it's doing, and likewise in Ukraine, where the USA and NATO, but overwhelmingly the USA, is the entity that is providing the greatest support. So there's just, to me, too many coincidences for this to be a series of historical diverse accidents. To me, it seems as if there's a plan, and it's one web with a central node of some sort, a nexus somehow, Professor.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that you've got it right on virtually every single point you've made. I mean, I've done work on fluoride, and it turns out to be a neurotoxin. It kills brain cells. So if you want to kill brain cells, give yourself a healthy dose of fluoride daily. Chemtrails include barium, strontium, and aluminum particles. It can act as accelerants if you were to have a fire. I've been terribly concerned that they're being spread over the Pacific Northwest, rich with our forests, because it makes our forests very, very flammable and easy to take out. which would further contribute to the destruction of America. But regarding your overall central point, I have no doubt whatsoever with these cultural moves, including not only the open borders and the lawlessness being facilitated, but the transgender movement and the teaching third-year-old kids, third graders about anal and oral sex. This is all intended to destroy the mores, the foundation and fabric of American culture, and it's part and parcel of a war against whites. Whites, mostly Christians, I think you're exactly right. And ironically, and it's taken me a long time to appreciate this, the Jews do not regard themselves as white. They, of course, are a separate and distinct race, and they regard themselves as superior to all the other races, which exist only to serve them, including all their wealth, which belongs to them. Not a position, by the way, held by every Jew, mind you, but by the Talmudic Jewish supremacists who are running the world, including the Rothschild banking empire. They all believe they're entitled by God to control the world, that God gave basically not just Palestine, basically the world is supposed to be theirs to control. So, Simon, I have to agree with every point you've been making here. And the sooner the American people awaken to the reality, the better prepared we will be to deal with it, because we're kept in a state of massive ignorance, even of false belief, by the media, which, of course, itself here in the United States is completely dominated by dual U.S.-Israeli citizens, as I reported here again and again and again. It's outrageous. And where the Rothschilds actually own the AP and Reuters, so virtually every news item we get about events, national or international, other than local news, is filtered through an Israeli lens. That is the plight, that is a predicament of the American people today. Those in other nations who have responsible news reporting, Russia is especially beneficial. With RT, Sputnik News, and so forth, Iran benefits from Press TV, the Arab world from Al Jazeera. They're all better informed than the American people, sad to say, because we are the ones who, theoretically, if we could affect our election system, which today we cannot, could make a difference in bringing this to a halt. But they're just running rampant over us here, Simon, because they've taken control of the election system. And even if we ran the most superior possible candidate on the Republican side, I've suggested even if the Republicans ran Jesus Christ as their candidate, he'd still lose to the Democrat, whether it were Biden or Newsom or Michelle Obama. I mean, it's unbelievable, but that's a reality that, to which we must reconcile, wake up to, and do something about.
Well, you know, Professor, I'm sorry to pour cold water, but I don't see Americans doing anything about this. It seems as if Americans are almost the most complacent of all people. As I say, I don't know what it is. Is it indoctrination? Is it this? Is it that? I don't know. But, you know, if you consider a Cartesian plane and a graph, moving from left to right on an XY axis, and you take it from, let's say, 1971-72, Roe versus Wade, and you extrapolate it through now, I put it to you that if I speak to ordinary Americans and I say to them, I believe that 10 years from, it doesn't matter whether I do or don't believe this, if I say it to Americans, if I say, I believe that 10 years from now, it will be compulsory for American children at school of about 13 to 14 years old to be exposed directly to practice, to have a taste of homosexual intercourse. Americans look at me as if I'm daft. But if I'd said to Americans 20 years ago that one Friday, of 4 weeks ago, incidentally, that I, Simon Roche, will be in the USA listening to the radio while driving across the USA, and I will hear a report of a court case in which the court took the side of the mother slash wife against an action brought by the father slash husband to prevent the mother from permitting the five-year-old boy to undergo castration. Americans of 20 years ago would have told me that I had rocks in my head. So I put it to you, Professor, that you Americans are going to sit by and watch and do nothing except perhaps maybe vote for some guy that, you know, is just a little bit better or presents an illusion, a beguiling illusion of being better, while this stuff goes ahead, while you reach the point that they convince you that the right thing to do is that every 13 or 14-year-old child, before they make their decision, should be given the benefit of exposure to both options or to multiple options so that they can, and I know that this phrase will catch you guys every time, you love it, you Americans, an informed decision. I know that they will use those words, informed decision, and all 339 million of you, bar none, will say, well, that sounds about reasonable. It's unbelievable to me, Professor. It is absolutely unbelievable. Look, I'm exaggerating a bit because I've now traveled 7,197.5 miles across the length and the breadth of the USA for about 2.5 months. I previously, on a previous occasion, did 27,000 miles over 6 months. And my
Simon, hold that thought. We have a break. We'll be right back with Simon Roach. We'll be right back.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. At the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming. And it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Simon Roche from South Africa has been traveling the United States. I'm very pleased he has included me on his itinerary. And he's offering here observations about America and our failure to respond appropriately to major events in the world, which I'm convinced is in large measure because of the complete domination of the American media, newspaper, television, to some, but a lesser extent, radio, by the Israeli government, by Zionists who filter everything through a Zionist lens. Simon, continue.
Well, I was making the point that, in truth, there are many exceptions to this American mentality. I've driven tens of thousands of miles across this country. And the finest people, and I say this, I can back this up. I've said this in interviews with CNN. They spent 3 days doing a special with me, BBC, Russia Today. The finest true conservatives in the world are to be found in the USA. I explained it to our founder and leader, my boss, Mr. Gustav Miller in South Africa. And he said to me, Simon, you've got to talk about that to our people in South Africa. Make them understand that there is a higher standard to which we can aspire, such as is being evinced by the American conservatives. So there is that enormous exception. But by and large, as I was saying, 330 million people are all going to bow their heads and say, yes, sir, no, sir. Three bags full, sir, when this line is extrapolated, and in 10 years' time, this line of LGBTQ, in 10 years' time, in the public school system of the USA, they say that children should, before they make a choice, know what it is that they are choosing and not choosing so that they can make an informed decision, and therefore they should be directly exposed to homosexual intercourse in practice before they decide not to become LGBTQ. That is the degree and the extent of the perversity in this country, and Americans, astonishingly, by and large, fail to see it. It's mind-boggling, Professor. It really is mind-boggling to experience it firsthand and to listen to, as I'll end with this, as I've said to you, a news report on public radio of a court taking the side of the mother slash wife against the husband slash father to allow her to have her five-year-old boy's gonads removed. For pity's sake, man, what is wrong with you people?
Oh, Simon, that's just outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. I couldn't agree more. I mean, disgusting is not a strong enough word for it. Go ahead. More.
Well, I don't know what there is to add, Professor. It's just, it's kind of a leitmotif, isn't it? It's a recurring theme. You're just like a nodding donkey above a Texas oil well in Midland, Odessa. You just keep coming back to the same thing. What on earth are we going to do, if anything? How can we be in such a dire situation, direct witnesses to it, and do absolutely nothing about it whatsoever? Nobody lifts a finger. Nobody takes matters into their own hands. And I'm not talking stupid stuff like sedition and insurrection. Anybody who knows me well enough, anybody who's listened to the roughly 400 interviews that I've given across the world over the past 6 years knows. And anybody who knows me from South Africa knows. I don't even own a firearm. It's not my way of thinking. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not anti-firearm. It's just not my way. The sedition and insurrection thing is not my way. I think that it just leads to entrapment and bad answers. But clearly, voting is not the way. You know, the classic example is Donald Trump. May God bless him for all of the goodness inside of him. But when he took office, the U.S. debt was $19.8 trillion. When he left office, it was $27.8 trillion. So he had increased the debt by $8 trillion exactly, which was 40%. 8 trillion is 40% of 20. He'd increased it by 40%, which is more than double in absolute terms. Any other president with an 8-year term, his term was, of course, 4 years, or any two presidents with 4-year terms, notwithstanding COVID, take out a trillion or two. You look at that and you think to yourself, seeing the debt, what it's doing to the U.S. dollar, what it's doing to inflation across the length and the breadth of the USA, what it's doing to unemployment, to homelessness, to people living in cars, to whole families, as I've witnessed because I stay in cheap motels, whole families living in motels because they can't get houses to rent and they can't afford to buy houses. The USA is being wrecked by debt. And people are saying, we need Trump back. What, for another 8 or 10 or 12 or 15? How much would be enough for you? My point being, it seems as if when we examine this great concatenation of catastrophe all around us, that we look for answers in the wrong places. Nothing that we've tried so far has had the desired effect. And we need to find something else, Professor. We really do. Or, as I say, not many years from now, they will be giving practical demonstrations in classrooms of the other option when it comes to sexual intercourse. And the debt will be $150 trillion and the unemployment rate will be 97%, that you only have to extrapolate the line on the graph to see that what I'm saying is not preposterous. It's not. What I'm saying is not absurd. You know, John Williams' shadow stats, Professor, suggests that the true inflation rate in the USA at the moment, I say suggests, proves empirically and irrefutably that the U.S. inflation rate is now roughly 16%. And there's an argument to be made. He makes the argument elsewhere, John Williams does, that it may be as high as 27%. What's the, tell me the magic number. Tell me, Professor, I'm here to learn. My young man, I want to learn. What is the number when Americans say enough is enough? Not vote for a guy who makes it worse, but enough is enough, Professor. That's my question. What is the point? What is the thing that you do? As I say, I'm like a nodding donkey on a Texas oil field, just bashing my head against the same theme over and over and over again. And I'm not going to stop bashing my head. If I drive myself to concussion, I feel that this is the thing that we should be discussing. Not all of this extraneous, fluffy candy floss that so many conservatives seem to get involved in, but which to me makes no damn difference at the end of the day to the circumstances in which we find ourselves in the Western world, in Christendom, Professor Fetzer.
Well, you've made so many devastating points, Simon. I'm fascinated. I want you to tell us a little about the topic I mentioned at the top of the hour, bringing in self-defense and the situation in South Africa, and what Americans can learn from your experience there.
Well, I should begin by saying that there's some congenital thing in Americans that makes them the best preppers in the world. Really, I say that there's no flattery in that. That is a deadly sincere remark. Americans are the best preppers for crisis in the world. So I don't know how much your audience can learn from me. But our organization, Saitlanders, and people can have a look at our English language website, Saitlanders.org, S-U-I-D, S-U for uniform, I, D, Landers, Saitlanders, Saitlanders.org. It means Southerners, Southlanders, but it's the equivalent of Southerners because we're from South Africa. Is the largest prepper organization in the world, unquestionably, hands down. But that's because we have one cohesive, coherent organization, whereas Americans are more kind of atomized in that sense, for various good reasons, by the way. And we're preparing for civil war because, as far as we're concerned, it's an inevitability in South Africa. And as I told you privately over dinner, for which I thank you once again for that very extravagant dinner, Professor, our president has recently said that if the African National Congress ruling party loses next year's elections, then they're going to instigate a proper revolution. So we, as far as we're concerned, the writing is on the wall, and that's what we're preparing for. And I think I've discussed this, and in anticipation of this very program with a number of people in recent days, and I've come to the conclusion that the first and most important thing is vehicle and fuel. You can have great health, you can have all of God's most precious gifts, but if you are confronted by an insurmountable threat, it doesn't matter how well armed you are, how fit and healthy you are, how many press-ups and sit-ups and pull-ups you can do, you need first and foremost to be able to get away from that threat. And we in South Africa, Saitlanders, always say to people that they should have 600 miles worth of fuel that they can immediately put in the back of their vehicle, regardless of how full their tank is, and to remove themselves from a threat, and to get to our Saitlanders' national emergency plans. We have what we call a national emergency plan, is safe area, which is a very, very depopulated, unpopulous portion of South Africa. Then, of course, you have to think about defensibility. Defensibility, this is the United States of America. I need not give Americans a lecture on firearms. You know more about firearms than I ever will. The third most important thing is, of course, the small group. The small group based upon high trust relationships of mutual interdependence. And why I use the tautological redundancy, using two words to say exactly the same thing, mutual and inter, instead of just mutual dependence, is to emphasize the crucial importance of the fact that the other guy has to have value to you, and you have to have value to the other guy. A small group based upon six doctors is bound to fail. A small group based upon six billionaires is bound to fail. A small group based upon a mechanic, a doctor, a handyman, and a stockman or a crop grower is bound to succeed almost in spite of the character traits of the people involved. I might hate the mechanic who's in my small group. I might have no time for him at all, but I'm going to treat him well, and I'm going to hope that he treats me well for the sake of what I can get from him, because if my motor vehicle breaks down, I'm not going to be able to do anything about it. I know nothing about cars. And so you can speak for almost every category of human endeavor, except perhaps politicians and lawyers in a time of crisis. They will obviously have no value whatsoever. Fourthly, perhaps is the safe place, the harbor, the refuge, the safe haven, a place to go with your small group in your motor vehicle with adequate fuel, while defensible, that is removed from greater threat. Everybody should have a place that they can flee to, because much as you might believe that your suburb is less likely to be affected, in a time of crisis, people become barbarians. The classic example to me, perhaps I haven't done enough reading, but in what I do know, the best example is the siege of Jerusalem in AD 70, as recorded by Josephus in the Wars of the Jews, where the Romans discovered that women, not fathers, not men, women, mothers, over and over again, had resorted to the cannibalism of their children. Time and time again, the people that they caught with half-eaten, roasted bodies of their children were mothers. And that illustrates to you how, in a time of great lack, in a time, it's the extreme example of how, in the time of the worst crisis, the very worst, the very best people, our women, our kind, gentle, loving, beautiful women resort to the worst behavior. I'll digress very briefly with an anecdote that you may appreciate. I listened not so long ago to a story, it's on YouTube, by a guy who does, he kind of reads out letters and books and articles from hundreds of years ago to shed some light on the perspective of the time. And the first Indian from the subcontinent of India, he was a Mughal, that is to say a Muslim Indian, you know, the Mughal emperors, the Muslims ruled over the Hindus in those days. And he sailed from India to Great Britain to chat to the Europeans. And along the way, he met various women down the east coast of Africa, up into the Mediterranean, and he was already familiar with some people from Malaysia and India and the Philippines and what have you, some contact over decades. And he wrote about how the finest women in the world in every regard were the European women. He didn't write in a salacious or lascivious or prurient way at all. It wasn't about that. He was saying, I have now met our women. I know all of the Hindu women of India. I know the women of Nepal who came down from the mountains to our region, the women of Bangladesh, of Pakistan, of the Philippines, of Malaya, of the African women, of the North African women who don't resemble Africans at all, if anybody knows anything about the people of North Africa. They are nothing like Africans, as you think of Africans. He said, I know them all. And the finest are the European women. They are the most beautiful. They are the most gracious. They are the most feminine. They are the best. They make the best wives. They make the best mothers. They make the best homemakers. No women in the world come close to them. But we know that in times of crisis, those Southeast Judaic women were eating their own kids. So, as I say, you may think that in your place, people's behavior will be just about okay in a time of crisis. It certainly won't. You have to have a place that you can flee to divorce yourself from every form of threat. Now, I've spoken for a long time, Professor. Would you like to interrupt me?
No. Go. I'm enjoying this immensely, Simon. Lay on.
Okay. Well, the next item on my list is silver. We know that throughout history, societies in crisis have resorted to silver. It's just one of those things that doesn't bear mentioning again. You Americans have no lack of access to knowledge and information about the relevance of silver in a time of crisis. So I'm not going to labor that point very much, not to an American audience anyway. If you don't have silver going into a time of social or economic or conflictual crisis, well, that's your own fault. It's not your mother's or your father's or God's or, you know, whoever you want to blame for your miseries. It's your own fault. The next item is antibiotics. Now, we could talk about medicines generally, but I want to make a very interesting point, or a point that I've always found fascinating. There's a guy called Jaco, Americans pronounce it Selko, who was a Croatian Christian trapped in Bosnia, in an enclave within Muslim Bosnia during the Yugoslav breakup, all of those Yugoslav wars. And he and his people were trapped for a year. And so they learned a lot about civil war and how to make it. And afterwards, he left Bosnia, came to the USA, and has made a lot of money as a guru in the field of civil war. He's a very fine expert. And one of his anecdotes is about antibiotics. He says, leave aside defensibility just for the minute. Just put it one side. Everybody knows how important it is to have guns. And if you don't have guns, well, anybody can come along and steal your things. He says, but just leave that aside for 1 minute and listen to what I have to say. Antibiotics are more important than all of the weapons in the world. They are more important than anything else in the world when it comes to preparing for crisis. This is his opinion, and I'm sharing it with your audience. He said, because our experience was that the moment that you couldn't get antibiotics and illness started spreading, and then injuries and wounds began to occur, he said people would trade mortars, bazookas, rocket-propelled grenades, machine guns, any type of weaponry you like, you could get for antibiotics. He said there was nothing you could not get for antibiotics, and therefore, in his opinion, antibiotics are the very most important of all of the things you could possibly prepare, although they're only number, I think, something like 6 on my list. Then, of course, we know about stored food for the short term. You have to be able to get yourself through at least 1 growing season. Different crops take different periods of time to grow, but most preppers work on the rule of thumb of 3 months as a growing season, as a rule of thumb. It's only a rule of thumb, but you need to be able to feed yourself for at least 3 months when you plant food. Now, if you consider that you can't plant crops at just any time of the year and say, well, I've got now 90 days and then they should start bearing for me. I should be all right. You actually have to multiply that 3 months by two, because some growing, some planting seasons are very, very seasonal. And the window period, especially here in the far northern hemisphere of the world, the United States of America, Western Europe, Canada, and places like that, you only have a very brief window of opportunity to plant certain crops in certain growing periods. So actually you have to work on 6 months. And that's a kind of average that we give when we speak about this. It's 3 months, but given the fact that timing might not be on your side, work on 6 months. You must have 6 months worth of food stored. I have about 1 year's worth of food for about 10 people, if that's of any benefit to anybody. So that's for the short term. Then for the long term, you've got to have heirloom seeds / open pollinated seeds. There are different terms that are used by the fundies, by the experts, by the gurus in this field. I think that your audience knows roughly what I'm talking about. Organic seeds, that's the wrong word. The experts always say you should never say organic seeds, but to idiots like you and me, organic seeds. Organic seeds, trapping gear, hunting gear, and fishing gear. Yes.
Simon, we're about to hit the break, and we're going to take calls. 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452, a unique opportunity with someone from South Africa giving his perspective on America. You can't make this shit up. We'll be right back with Simon Roche and your calls.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy.
But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Simon, as we await our first caller and the lines are open, as I gather, you anticipate having an automobile with lots of fuel is indispensable. Having a stock of food up to a year's worth is really desirable. You haven't mentioned weapons, but of course, I think they're obviously essential too, because as urban centers continue to decay and people grow more desperate, they're going to reach out to the suburbs and eventually out to rural areas, and they're going to take any home they can, any resources they can find there. It's going to be wild, it's going to be vicious, and it's going to be every man for himself. Give us more thoughts about how we can cope with what appears increasingly to be an inevitable sequence of events right here in the USA.
Well, Professor, I glossed over defensibility was the word that I used, because this is the United States of America, and there's not much that I, as a guest on your show, can teach Americans about firearms. You know, it's the field in which American preppers and survivalists excel above almost all other peoples in the world, but vitally important. I just glossed over it for the reason I've just given. The next item, as I was saying, is as one category, as a single category, is heirloom seeds, trapping equipment, hunting and fishing equipment. I, for instance, have the means to I happen to live on a dam, what we call a dam, what you call a reservoir, that is 60 miles long, just a little bit more than 60 miles long, and is about 350 feet deep. So it's a big body of water with many fish in it, and I have the means to extract about in US pounds, about 28,000 pounds of fish a year, which, by the way, is sustainable on that body of water. I know, because I spoke to the limnologist in charge of the dam. He's a great expert, and he said you can safely take out that amount in any year. That's the thing. It's all about being able to plant, to get crops, and to hunt, and to fish, and to trap, because people are going to starve very, very much in a time of crisis. No two ways about it. The other thing, my big thing is items for barter. I always say to people that if you don't have money to prepare very well, but you've got tons of, well, lots, not literally tons, you've got a couple of hundred brass screws, those countersunk head wood screws, brass screws, ordinary brass screws, and pop rivets and nails are going to attain the value that they had, the relative value that they had, of yesteryear, in a time when the great European powers were building ships to sail across the Atlantic Ocean to the New World, the screws were worth more than a man's labor, a day's wage. So if you have items for barter, that was just one random example. There are many examples that we could give, such as screws and nails and welding rods and pop rivets and whatever you like, you're likely to do well. And then, of course, tools. The guy that goes into a crisis with a set of chisels and a brace and a spoke shave and a plane and a hammer and whatever else you care to mention, a set of screwdrivers and so on and so forth, ad infinitum, is going to do very, very, very well for himself. And last but not least, I'll throw in that terrible example, electricity. Electricity may be very hard to come by, impossible to come by for many people in the worst circumstances like civil war. And many people are going to have to learn to live without it completely. But those who do have a modicum of electricity, renewable electricity, because fuel is not going to be easy to come by, so generators, it's almost pointless having a generator. So we talk really about solar. Anybody who's got a solar system is going to be able to ensure a modicum of comfort and ease that other people would give their eye teeth for. And that's my entire list for the purposes of your show today, Professor Fetzer.
Well, I'm very pleased. We have a caller, Paul No Longer from California, to join the conversation. Paul.
Well, it's really hard for me to know where to begin. I heard most of the show. So, Simon, you know, you went on a lot of enjoyable rants, by the way. You started one of them by saying, I can't help but wonder. And then you started linking all these things together. And I immediately wanted to say, well, wonder no more, okay, because it's the Jews. I mean, you did everything but say it's the Jews, and that's really what needs to be said. It's the heart of the matter. You know, there's a black guy named Io Camothi that has written a book. He's been on many shows. In fact, Jim, I'm sure you're aware, Giuseppe has interviewed him several times. And his book has got a great title, The Jews Are the Problem. Okay, all this nonsense, all this blather that many people say, and not just Simon, but so many, it can be distilled down to the fact that it's historically the grievances of a variety of people in a variety of societies and civilizations, the legitimate grievances against the behavior of the Jews. Okay, that's all this is. It's never been anything other than that. And it's not just for a few years now, is it? It's for millennia. Okay, this problem doesn't go away until it gets dealt with. And what I have a problem with is all this talk about survivalism, right? And being prepared and food and gas and blah, 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 all this stuff. And why is that even necessary? It's because civilized society is being destroyed by our enemy, as many other people in the past have labeled mankind's eternal enemy. As I pointed out on many calls, what would you have to do to earn such a title as nation wrecker, culture destroyer, mankind's eternal enemy? And I can't help but think to myself, wouldn't it be easier to kill our enemy, the enemy that's trying to kill us, right? Wouldn't it be easier to kill them rather than just to go devolve into a survival of the fittest society where we're actually, you know, we're going back in time and back in standard of living and back in sophistication because it's being engineered by our eternal enemy? So, you know, earlier in one of your rants, you said something about, well, you don't think that insurrection or revolt or whatever term you chose is really the answer. And you don't own a gun and blah, 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 blah. Okay, all that's fine. You can feel that way and you can think that way. But I got news for any white man. I have a problem with any white man who's a grown up who eschews violence, who says, well, that force or violence isn't the answer. It's the only answer. It's always been the answer. And the title of this video that I watched quite a few months ago now is quite simple. All right. The title of the video is "The Jews Must Be Forcibly Removed." And the operative word in forcibly is force. This is the only thing that's going to work. It's the only thing that's ever worked. So that's the this is my response to you talking about how voting doesn't matter, because we all know voting doesn't work. And you talk about this same problem up and down. You use the bobbing up and down of an oil derrick that you saw as an example of what it is we're doing. So that's just my initial gut reaction, everything you're saying. By the way, I've always liked a good South African accent, just like I've always appreciated a good British accent. I think you know what the problem is. The Jews, with their economic and their government policies, are deconstructing our society, and they're going to destroy it with hordes of niggers and brown people. And we as white men have to get pissed off enough to do something about it, because we all know that giving lectures and doing radio shows is not going to remove the Jews from power. Okay, I'm out of breath. Thanks for hearing me.
Well, that was all great, Paul, but you would agree we have to focus on the problem. You're doing a focus on how you see the problem, and if enough people agree, it might be the occasion for collective action and response. But without radio programs to analyze what's going on, how would we know how to sort this all out? Simon, your thoughts in response to Paul's ongoing commentary.
Well, I appreciate what Paul says. He's spot on. But unfortunately, people must accept that I have to speak in a subtle, cunning, and shrewd way. I have to dissemble and prevaricate, because in my home country, we do not have the luxury of the First Amendment. I simply cannot, for fear of incarceration, say certain things. It's out of the question, and that's why I dissemble. I mean, I hinted at it enough, I think, that I do apprehend this stuff. I am probably the best-read person that I know, personally, on this field of the conspiracy against the Christ. I can quote chapter and verse, things like, for instance, the commentaries that explain that Christ was so hated by God as the worst creature ever that he is being boiled alive in excrement. There's another interpretation of that, of the original word, that is far stronger than excrement, for all of eternity. So I do fully appreciate this matter, but sadly, I have to hint at it. I have to use innuendo, because I cannot explicitly say things that are beyond the bounds of the laws of my country.
Of course. Oh. And I do appreciate that. And obviously, you know, Jim, the comments that I make about radio and podcasts and so forth, look, I enjoy radio just like you do, and it does serve a purpose, if nothing more than just, you know, so people can vent their feelings. I mean, I listen periodically to your show on RBN, and I realize, you know, you get the same callers over and over again because it's an outlet for them. However, the only reason I make the comments I do is because we both know that's not going to do anything. I don't really think the Jews fear information. I mean, sure, they can try to suppress it, and they can, you know, they can engage in their censorship, and they can play all their little games on the various platforms that they own and control. But in the end, I've read a passage from, I think it was Marcus Eli Ravage in the late 20s, I believe. And, you know, it was just a couple of paragraphs. And all he basically said was that until such time as, you know, it resorts to violence, that we Jews do not fear, you know, rhetoric or Gentiles, quote unquote, waking up. I mean, the bottom line is it couldn't be more obvious. You know, these people are literally, you know, the ones that are running. OK, not the average so-called everyday Jew. OK, we all know the not all argument does not need to be articulated. OK, but the people that are running the show and doing what they're doing, they're clearly psychopathic, you know, murderers. Right. I mean, who thinks about these things about poisoning or injecting children and adults everywhere with, you know, the various concoctions that are basically, at the minimum, they're an experiment, but we also know that they're designed to kill. You know, because they know that they can't go and, you know, do a sin the way, you know, that, you know, real men would do it on the battlefield. So this has always been their modus operandi to get control of the government and get control of the sources of information, get control of the medical field, you know, the legal field. I mean, this has been, this is nothing new. It's been written about many, many times throughout the centuries. They have a modus operandi, and we don't have the collective memory to keep dealing with it generation after generation, especially when our children are indoctrinated in their schools by their textbooks. And, you know, Simon is exactly correct. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if they would try. I mean, look at what they're already doing, right? They bring these demented faggots into a school and call it drag time, drag queen story hour. I mean, these people literally have the chutzpah that we really do need to have ourselves.
Yeah, Paul, I think you're nailing it. Simon, further thoughts of yours? Simon?
Yes, I'm just getting out of the wind. Well, that's the thing, isn't it, Professor? You know, the finger of blame must be pointed at all of us, not just at people in the United States of America, but we're talking now to an American audience. So therefore, I'm going to be a little bit accusatory, and I hope that I don't rile too many people. But the reality is that dementia is now institutionalized in the USA. I gave the example of the little boy being castrated at the age of 5. I heard another radio report of a court case in or a decision in Texas, which involved one of a set of two boy twins, two boys of 8 years old, and the mother had decided that the 1 8-year-old was actually a girl trapped in a boy's body. The father took the matter to court to stop the mother from having him castrated. And she lost. He lost the case. The mother won the case. That boy, it is institutionalized dementia. And Americans are doing bugger all about it. And that accusation must stand. Look, Professor, here's the ideal example. It became very clear very soon after the elections that Donald Trump supposedly lost, that there was massive fraud. Unbelievable. Absurd, really absurd levels of fraud. It wasn't subtle. What did Americans do? They got in their cars and they drove around Washington. I drive every flaming day of my life. A bunch of Americans got in their motor cars and they went for a drive. For pity's sake, man, do me a favor. I'm a grown-up man. Your election was flagrantly stolen. And the best you could do was drive a motor car. Our world is being dragged to hell. Our children's balls are being cut off. And this is the best we can manage.
So I think what Simon is trying to say here, if I may, and I completely agree with the sentiment, is there are times when a little, what I would call random and in many cases non-productive and even pointless violence is called for, because in many cases the specific violence is you know, it's not possible. I mean, recently, I don't know if you're aware of this, Simon, but there was some so-called riots in Dublin. Because some foreign, you know, person, some migrant was stabbing. He stabbed a couple of children, and he stabbed a woman that was trying to protect the children. And so mobs of Irish people started doing what a lot of black people do, which is breaking things and burning cars and so on. And it's like, okay, does that really solve the problem? No. Could you label that violence as pointless? Yeah, perhaps. But in my opinion, it's a start. Okay, it's a start, because the outrage has been killed in us, is I think the point that he's making quite clearly. There was a time, Jim, you know this, if they tried this crap in the schools back in the 20s or the 30s or the early 1900s, I mean, you know, people would have been lynched and killed, right? if they tried to do the stuff that they're doing now. And I really do think there is something to it with what's in the food and the water and everything else. But also, it's this fear of, shall we say, you're on your own. You're going to go to jail on your own. You're going to get life in prison on your own or whatever it is. But if you do what it is, you have the impulse to do. So even though the impulse is still in many of us, it's been reduced and suppressed, and we're all feeling, as Simon used the word earlier, atomized, okay? Because, you know, I felt this way throughout the better part of my adult life, that there wasn't enough people that thought the way I thought. You know, it was very frustrating, or they weren't aware of what I was aware of. And, you know, I've been pissed, and I wonder, how come you're not pissed? I mean, people think I have anger issues, but part of my anger issues is, why are you not angry? If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's good, Paul. Well, I like all that. Yeah, Simon, go ahead.
What Paul and I have said has been absolutely concurrent. We've concurred on everything apart from my unwillingness, not inability, unwillingness to call the thing for what it is for legal reasons in my home country.
Yes.
But where I'm going to differ with Paul is here. In France, they manned the barricades in the Gilles Jeune, it's called Gilles Jeune, Gilles something, protests for months on end over the working week. And separately over, I think it was a change to the pension laws or a proposed change to the pension laws. And that had a beneficial effect. And again, I say to you, with love, not with hatred, because the finest true conservatives, I mean true conservatives in the world, the people, the finest people in the world who hold true to the values of all of our common Western, Christian, European, Caucasian forefathers are the true conservatives of the United States of America. There is no two ways about that. But I say again, in France, people were willing to go wild, and it had an effect for months on end, on more than one occasion in recent years. The best, I'm sorry to say it, I'm sorry, but the best that the United States of America could do when an election was flagrantly stolen was go for a drive. A flipping drive! Come on, man.
Well, the problem is that the administration, things should have been done right off the bat. I'm sure Paul would agree with that. There should have been decisive action taken right off the bat. But so many members of the Trump administration were there to betray him, to subdue him, to block him from taking actions that he believed were right, but they wanted to oppose. I think he was seriously compromised as a consequence. And even though he wanted action to be taken, they were not taken. And I think there's no doubt it was because they were betraying him from the beginning, that they'd never been as sincerely on his side from scratch. Paul, your thoughts?
Well, I'm reminded of what I used to say when I called into your show during the Canadian truck drivers thing there up in Canada. Remember, Jim, I used to always say that just driving trucks to the Capitol is not going to do much, but if they want to run over some politicians, that'll get something going.
I like that.
I mean, if they drove their trucks, you know, all over the Capitol and happened to catch a few of those treasonous traitors underneath their wheels, then that's a start, you know. Now, of course, again, I could completely appreciate Simon and what he said about, you know, the laws in his own country and even in this country. And for all the listeners out there and anybody else that listens to the show after the fact on BitChute and other places, note what I said about wouldn't it make more sense? Okay, that's the way that I phrased it. Our society is being destroyed, okay? And I said, wouldn't it make more sense to kill the people that are trying to destroy our society rather than let our society be destroyed, is basically the way I was framing it. So, again, it's a fine line, but I'm generally aware of where the line is, and I walk right on it.
Yeah, no, I think that's right, Paul. I think you do an excellent job in that regard. Yeah, Simon, go ahead.
I beg your pardon. I just wanted to say that if 10 million Americans had protested in a meaningful manner, not if I remember correctly, and I could be mistaken, that big demonstration where everybody got in their Dodge Chargers and trawled around the Capitol for a few hours, if I am not mistaken, I stand to be corrected, happened over a weekend. I mean, you were generous enough not to inconvenience anybody by doing it over a week. I mean, it's unbelievable. The level of pathos in this is remarkable. Now, if instead 10 million Americans had come out onto the streets and demonstrated manfully, if I may use that word, in a strong, aggressive manner, the world, the entire world, would not be in the boat that it's in, because the free rein that has been given to the powers that be, the license that has been given to them by the tacit acceptance of Americans for all of the policies of the Biden administration. And I don't say that loosely. Let me give you a quick example. Because of the decisions taken in the Hotel Washington in 1944, the world went off the gold standard, but the U.S. remained on it. Then in 1971, 13th of August, the U.S. came off the gold standard. And as a result, all of the currencies of all of the world now kind of float loosely against the U.S. currency, which is backed by nothing. With the result that as you go into a terminal debt crisis, you will drag every currency in the world down with you. You are going to destroy all of us. Thank you very much for your deceit.
Simon, you've done a brilliant job today. I can't thank you enough, Paul. That was a wonderful call. Very spirited, excellent contribution. I just want to encourage everyone, spend as much time as you can with your family, your friends, and people you love and care about. We literally do not know how much time we have left. Thanks for being here on Revolution Radio today.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at...